a cold one, master the abstract. Step back and feel the contrast. Echoes of a broken past. Before my eyes, the future flashed. Concepts, the moment past. Fear of the manifest. Waging battle on my spirit. Surrender to what's fearless. See what bodies mix of love and lust. When love was hard to touch, I toss a prayer your way. Namaste, baby, namaste. Namaste, namaste.
Welcome to Yoga Talk, the Yoga International podcast. That was The Householders with our theme song, Namaste Nation.
Namaste.
I'm your host, Kat Hegberg. I'm the editor of YogaInternational.com.
And I'm Michael Carlucci. I'm one of the content imaginarians at YogaInternational.com.
So today, when Michael and I were on our way to the studio to record the podcast, we realized that it's been a year since we recorded the first podcast.
Has it been a whole year?
Yoga Talk number one. But you actually weren't around for the first podcast,
I guess,
Michael.
I wasn't.
Yeah, that was Emily and I, Emily Smith, who guest hosts occasionally and who will, I'm sure, be back again. And for podcast number one, we talked about yoga and body image. That seems so long ago.
So long.
So a full year. So Yoga and Body Image is actually a book that came out about a year ago as well, edited by Anna Guest-Jelly and Melanie Klein. And it's an amazing book, highly recommended by Yoga Talk. And in that first podcast, Emily and I read the book, shared our favorite essays. We interviewed Melanie Klein. And, you know, if you want to check that one out, it's podcast number one on our SoundCloud page. But body image, and specifically yoga and body image, of course, because we are Yoga Talk, is a topic that tends to come up a lot. It's a topic that we've gotten a lot of requests to talk more about, a topic that I'm really passionate about, that Yoga International is really, as a whole, is really passionate about facilitating this conversation. And we thought for our year anniversary, for podcast number 30, which I think is this one, right, Michael, number 30?
Yeah, this is number 30.
Yeah, for number 30, we thought we would revisit that topic a bit. And specifically, I wanted to revisit that topic in the context of yoga and body positivity, how yoga practice can help to facilitate body positivity, and what it is perhaps we still need to do in yoga culture to make yoga environments as a whole more body positive.
Ah, yoga culture, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that is, if you look at our iTunes description, it says something like, that's what we talk about is yoga culture.
Probably about 99% of yoga culture out there is what we're calling yoga culture, which is just the sort of average folks' understanding of what yoga is. I mean, there's other sides to it as well, but that is generally...
Didn't we have like a whole podcast that was like on the definition of yoga? At least we've talked about that a lot.
I think we could probably even have another one on that.
I'm sure we could. But yeah, but the idea that, you know, like... showing that yoga is more, or really not at all, about weight loss or pretty pictures or selling products. That's not what it's about. And how can we make these environments we've talked about before, too, where we practice yoga more inclusive, more welcoming, less shaming, and less about what a quote yoga body, you know, looks like. Because as we've, just like the bikini body, if you have a body and you do yoga, you have a yoga body.
Yeah.
If you have a body and you wear a bikini, you have a bikini body. Congratulations.
If you're a weightlifter, you have a weightlifter body. If you're
exactly.
a soccer player, if you're a footballer, you have a footballer body, right?
Right, right, exactly. And it goes, you know, so I taught Pilates before, like
you
long
have a
before
Pilates
I taught
body.
Yoga. Well, that was the thing. When I taught Pilates when I was in college and a little bit after college, the descriptions for the classes were always, Pilates will give you a long, lean dancer's body. And I'd always look at that. And so I danced, you know, for I think 23 years, maybe. I majored in dance in college for a little bit and everything. And I've never had a, quote, dancer's body. I've always had, you know, a very long torso, very short legs, and my legs would build muscle very quickly. And I remember my dance teachers always telling me I had gymnast thighs, as though, like, strong gymnast thighs were some sort of insult or something, which is ridiculous or something to be fixed. But the idea was I didn't have a dancer's body. But, you know, screw that. Yes, I did. I was a dancer.
Well, I don't like that. I don't like that discussion at all anyway.
No,
because it's
no.
like it's an external referent for something that should be defined from the internal. And it disturbs me when we talk about that, but I mean, our culture is rife with those kind of references. I mean, you can scratch anywhere in pop culture.
Well, it's because it sells, you know? Our marketing as a culture plays on insecurities, and the more that we can make people feel insecure about themselves, the more we can sell them things.
I mean, that's one thing. I actually think it goes deeper than that. I think that it's a result of us basically being externalized in our own personal awareness.
Michael always takes it back to the philosophy, you know,
and then,
that, listeners.
And then marketing kind of moves in there and sort of capitalizes on that. But I think it's our general anamaya normative behaviors as a culture that caused that to happen. But that's me.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. So as we're having this discussion about yoga and body image, I do want to say, like, Michael and I are just sharing our, you know, thoughts and experiences and guiding you towards some great articles and resources that we found really interesting and empowering. But I really want to acknowledge the work of lots of amazing people out there, specifically the Yoga and Body Image Coalition and Melanie Klein. And again, you can hear an interview with her on podcast number one. Writers and activists, teachers like Diane Bondi and Amber Carnes from Body Positive Yoga, Anna Guest Jelly of Curvy Yoga. All of these amazing people have also written articles on Yoga International, which you can search our archives and read. So I would really like to direct you to that for further resources. So it's interesting, Michael, to have you here on the podcast instead of Emily for this discussion, because I'm curious, as you know, a male, what your experience has been with yoga and body image. Because I feel like the discussion is often, not always, but often quite female-centric.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's just my perception because I'm, you know, looking at it from the lens of someone who identifies as female.
Well, we certainly do have male body image issues. I mean, males are not immune to that. I have struggled with some body image issues, too. I'm a sort of a thin guy, but I'm an aging guy. So, you know, some of the things that I look around in my society that I would like to see on my body aren't. But I've also had a pretty good relationship, I think, with it. I've never really sort of judged myself negatively for not having, you know, a V figure or a long flowing mane.
A V figure? Is that like I've actually never heard that. What is that?
Well, from the waist up, looks like a V.
Oh, okay.
Right, like gotcha. Like a swimmer's body or something like that.
Right. That, you know, the fill in the blank body.
But you know, I also knew this guy who was so macho and so masculine. And, like, he was always at the gym working out, and he was always, like, kind of like a loose cannon. Like, he was exactly who you would have kind of, like, put in the category as sort of, like, just like a really macho dude. And mm-hmm. he would complain to me that he never really felt very manly and that he wanted to start taking, like, testosterone, like, hormonal therapies. And I would say to him, it's like, dude, like, nobody thinks that about you. But his image of himself was one of not being very manly. And it's like, I'm telling you, like, anybody that would have come in contact with this guy would have said that's the opposite of what their experience was. So he was subject to body image sort of dysmorphia or body dysmorphia. So certainly...
Well, I think to be fair, like, dysmorphia is not really something that we can diagnose in somebody else. But, like, I think that it's fair to say that just because... And I think what you're saying is that just because someone has what we as outsiders might perceive as a very desirable body or something that we see as, like, wow, they fit into this X box that they would like to fit into, that's not necessarily how they view themselves.
Right, that's exactly it. That's why I want to bring it back to the scriptures in a sense, because it's like the way that you view yourself is oftentimes at odds with the way that you actually are in reality, in the now. And that gap between your perceived sense of self and your, let's say, actual self, the gap there, I think, is a great opportunity to actually do these sort of authentic practices of awakening.
Well, and I think that's a place where yoga can be really a positive influence, or has the opportunity to be a positive influence.
Because, has the opportunity,
yeah,
definitely. I would
yeah.
say has the opportunity, but oftentimes, I think was what this podcast is going to be about, doesn't, right?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Well, so thank you for sharing that. That's very interesting to get that perspective. And I think that I told, you know, quite a bit about my relationship with yoga and body image on the first podcast and probably on many subsequent podcasts. But as I was thinking of this, something that I contemplated recently is that for me, yoga initially was really empowering because I'd come from a dance background and a fitness background where what my body, you know, looked like was, if it was not very important to those around me, at least I had the perception that it was. And so yoga all of a sudden was this thing that was more about what I could do with my body, what I could feel and experience with my body, instead of what my body looked like. And I felt very welcome. I felt very accepted. And I felt like this yoga environment was something that was very healing for me and very different from like the dance and fitness environments. But when I look back on it and when I hear the experiences of others and when I think of other experiences that I've had since then, I realize that I think a lot of that feeling of being so welcome and accepted did, in a sense, come from me not recognizing or acknowledging or just even the fact that I acknowledged it or not, that I had this young, thin, white privilege that, you know, I looked like one might expect a quote yoga practitioner to look like. And because of that, I was like, oh, yoga's so accepting. But if at the time I hadn't been young, thin, and white, I might not have felt so accepted. And so I think it's important to acknowledge our privilege and not just say, oh, yoga's so wonderful and accepting, just because that's been, you know, like for me to say that wouldn't really be, it would be a little disingenuous because I'm just speaking to my experience as someone who was, you know, had all that privilege. And since then, still, I recognize that I have lots of privilege, but since then, I remember times later on where yoga started to not feel so empowering. And specifically times that I can think of are, for me, yoga has never been about weight loss, but I remember, you know, teachers even saying, oh, Kat, have you lost weight? And it was just like a weird thing to hear in yoga class, like, wow, you look great. Have you lost weight? And of course, you know, my mind, my insecurities go back to like, did I look like I needed to before? Like, why are they praising me for this? Like, I didn't want to lose weight. I don't think that I lost weight. And I thought about how the funny thing is, I'm kind of simultaneously always and never trying to lose weight. Like, I'm never actively trying to lose weight, but there's part of that cultural insecurity that's embedded in me where I'm just always like, oh, it'd be great if I could lose 10 pounds. Maybe I'm going to drink this diet soda instead of this regular soda because, it, you know, just like all of those little things that kind of play in. And those comments, instead of making me feel good, which is how I think they were intended to make me feel, actually made me feel very insecure about myself. So yeah, and I think that that can be prevalent, that we can have these intentions that are really good, but I do strongly feel that comments about calorie burning and weight loss and, you know, anything like that are not really appropriate for the yoga studio, unless perhaps you're working one-on-one with a student who they themselves have expressed that that is their explicit goal and they came to you for that reason. Otherwise, I can't really think of any time when that those comments would be appropriate.
Do you know what the antidote for that is?
Is it meditation?
Yep.
I knew you were going to say that. I mean, I don't know that I would say that is the cultural antidote. I have the word anecdote written on my show notes right now, so I'm reading that. But the cultural antidote. But I do think certainly that contemplative practices and meditative practices can be very helpful on a personal level. They certainly happen.
Of course, you know what I mean by meditation is I mean the classical practice of bringing the mind to a place of stillness. That's what I mean. I'm not talking about, you know, as we had in an earlier podcast, the gardening or the sailboating.
That can be very helpful too, though.
It's nice. It's not meditation, though.
Well, it depends on how you define meditation. And if you want to hear Michael and I argue about that, you can go to our SoundCloud page.
I'm gonna define this for Tanjali.
Our podcast on meditation. And that is a yogic definition of meditation. But the English word meditation does have many different connotations and definitions depending on the spiritual or even not spiritual tradition that you come from. But again, check out that podcast if you want to hear more on that. So yeah, as to kind of get back on our show note track, you know, the comments about weight loss, really, I just feel like they don't belong in yoga class. And I noticed I was reading an article. It was in a prominent yoga publication. And this article was about Halloween, and it was kind of like a lighthearted, like fun, like way to make your yoga class more Halloween-y. I had actually just written an article about that, and it popped up when I was searching for my own article, and it wasn't mine. And there was this statement in this particular article that these Halloween yoga poses would help you to burn off your Halloween candy. And I know it was meant lightheartedly. I know it was, I'm pretty sure it was meant in jest, but just those comments can be so loaded. And I mean, first of all, doing yoga poses, like just from a physiological level, for most people, a yoga class is not really going to burn that many calories. And it's probably not going to burn as many calories as somebody might ingest by eating a decent amount of Halloween candy. But also, like, why is there this assumption that anybody wants to burn off their Halloween candy? I eat Halloween candy once a year. It's enjoyable, it's fun, and then I don't eat it again for a while. Like, why should I punish myself for that, you know? I think that we as people in media, and we as you and me, Michael, and other people in media, and we as practitioners and our listeners, that we have the power to shape yoga culture. Mm-hmm. We have the power by what we choose to consume. We have the power by putting ourselves out there as we are. We have the power to do that by we in media, like by choosing who we choose to represent us, the things that we choose to publish, the things that we choose to talk about. And all of us, you know, like we've said before, I think it was on our podcast on the pornification of yoga, that, you know, like Lululemon isn't going to shift the culture in this direction that we're talking about wanting to shift it positively. Like we as practitioners, we as the people, we have to do it. We have to demand it. We have to choose what we're spending our money on. We have to choose who we're deciding to support and what kind of yoga culture we want to shape. Like we have that power, and
we do.
Really kind of awesome.
It's actually pretty empowering once you realize that you can actually affect the culture by the choices that you make with what you buy, voting with your dollar, with what you wear, you know, and that's amazingly empowering. I mean, I sometimes I focus a lot on like what looks like negative websites and stuff, but I don't ever feel bad about it because it's like I am doing my part, you know, and like that's like a great thing. I feel like really great about that. So like we do have that power to change.
And you know, I'm going to shift the conversation a little bit to say that those of us who teach yoga, by the language that we choose to use in the classroom, that makes a huge difference. And again, I'm just kind of jumping back a couple of minutes here, by maybe choosing not to use language like calorie burning and weight loss. Thanksgiving is coming up. How about we don't say, let's do all this work so we can eat our turkey later? How about we do our yoga because it's our yoga and we eat our turkey or tofurkey or whatever we're eating because it's delicious and celebratory? And we don't make one exist to cancel out the other. I found this article recently in the New York Times. It was from, I think, this past April. And it was on a studio that's actually in Portland where I lived for a few years called Fat Yoga. And I remember when that studio opened, actually. It was just before I left. And in this particular article, they interview this practitioner at the studio, Javen Jordan Green, who at the time was 28. And I loved what he said here. He said that he was practicing at the studio called Fat Yoga because he wanted a place to practice where the teacher wouldn't assume he was going through the flow to lose weight. And he says, quote, I've had teachers who said, this is going to help you stay thin, or this is going to get rid of that unwanted role here if we keep practicing. It's like, maybe I like that role. Maybe the people I date like that role. I had a lot of teachers treat me like I'm their special project. They'll say, I'm going to make you the buffest person. They see me as an after picture when I don't want to be the after picture. First of all, what an awesome dude. I wish that I had known you when I lived in Portland, Mr. Green. Second, yes, I think that that's a lesson for all of us as teachers, that we can't just presume by what a student looks like what they want or why they come to yoga. And it, just like you can't presume that someone wants to burn off their Thanksgiving dinner. Like again, to sound like a broken record, I just feel like that language is better left outside the yoga studio.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it goes back to yoga identity and yoga culture identity, and then a question of intention and what is it people really want in their yoga class. And I think that gets a little muddied, and maybe people aren't clear about what it is they want. And
I think
yoga
that
culture,
people can be perfectly clear what they want. Like, I think that in that interview that, you know, Mr. Green was, why am I calling Mr. Green? Let me call him by his first name. I think that in that interview that Javen Jordan Green, you know, in that quote, that he is very clear about why he's coming to yoga. And he's also very clear about why he's not coming to yoga. And I think that it's our job as teachers not to presume why anyone's coming to yoga. For me, as a teacher, I know how to lead a yoga class. And that is my job, to lead a yoga class and to do my best to make everybody feel included. My job is not to presume why any specific person is in class, and not to treat anyone any differently because of how they look or how I perceive them. That's not my job. I'm not qualified to do that. I don't know that anybody's qualified to do that. There's also a great article on Yoga International that I'd love to direct our listeners to. This is called Practice What You Preach. The Yoga Teacher is an Example of Self-Love by Carling Harps. Carling, again, another Portland yoga teacher. I didn't realize I had so many Portland references in these show notes. I think I've been getting a little nostalgic for it this past month. But in this article, one thing that she talks about specifically is the compliments that we give. And she says, believe it or not, there are other compliments out there besides, you look great, did you lose weight, or you look so pretty. Little boys are more than tough. Little girls are more than sweet or adorable or cute. Most of us have been conditioned from day one to tie our self-worth to our physical bodies, and it's a connection that's not easily severed. At the risk of being overly cautious, it's simply impossible to know where someone might be struggling with. At the height of my struggle with bulimia and Adderall abuse, during and after college, the unknowing compliments on my weight changes, while well-intentioned, only served to fuel the fire that what I was doing was working. That 3 or 4 hours at the gym a day, while on stimulants plus binging and purging, was making me look, quote, great. I looked, quote, so skinny. What had I been doing to get so, quote, healthy? Well, I developed an eating disorder, and based on the comments of my peers and family, it seemed to be working quite well. So that's another thing to consider when you use those comments. You know, like, oh, you look great. Did you, like, we just don't know what's going on with anybody. It's better to keep our comments body neutral instead of, you know, making specific mentions of students' bodies in the classroom.
Well, you see, to me, this comes back to the whole identity of yoga and the whole identity of yoga culture, because as I was trained in the 15,000-hour teacher training of living here and being immersed in Yoga International,
the teacher training called life.
Well, actually being immersed in yoga culture for the last 3.5 years and working with yoga content and all this, it's like I've seen like all everybody teaching things, and it seems to me that compliments about yoga poses have no place in the traditional aspects of yoga.
Well, here's what I mean.
If you're sitting in a lotus pose, I'm going to come up and be like, your meditation is so good today.
Well,
it's like,
course,
you just don't say that.
Of course you're not. But I think it goes outside of yoga, and just you look at it as being human. Like, I think that it's a very human and a very wonderful and beautiful thing to authentically say nice things to each other. Like, as a teacher in a classroom, I absolutely will say something nice if I see something beautiful about a student's pose, about what they're doing, about something that they are actually consciously doing and working hard at, then yes, I will say, wow, your back leg looks super strong in that lunge. That's amazing. I'm not saying, wow, your thighs look really chiseled. That is an inappropriate comment. Do you see the difference? And I'm not saying that this is yoga. I'm saying that the context, the environment, is a yoga-related environment, and that is being a human being who, as the teacher, is in a position of authority and has to be very, very careful about what they say and what they project onto students, that's where this is really coming from. It's not so much about what the definition of yoga is.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like the teacher maybe doesn't know what the student wants. The student may not know what the student wants. The student may know what the student wants. And then we have this whole kind of like bouillabaisse stew of what yoga culture is in the first place. So
yeah, and I mean, it's not that we don't ever make mistakes. It's just like we can ask ourselves consciously as teachers, how can we make our studios more body positive environments? I think that's a good question to be asking. And I know there are so many things that I used to say, like, God, I don't even remember how many Thanksgiving classes I taught where I talked about twists detoxing, which, by the way, they really don't so much, or, you know, like burning off the Thanksgiving turkey. And to me, I just assumed, I'm like, oh, well, everybody wants that. This is what Thanksgiving is about. These are funny, relatable comments. And my intentions weren't bad. My intentions weren't to shame anyone or make anyone, you know, feel uncomfortable in their body or uncomfortable in the classroom. It was only through learning how I did something that could be, you know, wrong, that was, could be considered hurtful, that I learned not to do it. So it's not that we have to be perfect, but it's just that we always have to keep learning. And when we learn that something that we do is hurtful or not helpful or could be harming our students, then we stop doing that thing.
Well, yeah, once you see, right, with the light, then you start to see into your darkness, and then you... And but again, darkness doesn't mean some kind of twisted sex fetish thing.
Aww.
Or something like that. I mean, well, it could for some people, but like darkness is just like, where are you not seeing? You know, like it's just like when you open your eyes, you see things in front of you. You don't see what's literally behind you. And it's like well, maybe we could practice starting to be aware of what's behind us in our shadow.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just like the more we have, the more we experience life here on Earth, not even yoga, but just like life as a human, the more opportunities we have to learn, the more opportunities we have to grow. And if we take those opportunities and if we learn from our mistakes, then ultimately I think we can become kinder, gentler, smarter, more effective people. But yeah, I think we're in agreement on that anyway. So this whole love your body thing, you know, we hear it. It is very trendy. But love your body is, you see it in a lot of marketing. And in a way, that's good that we're getting that message out there. But also in a way, that message is kind of, you know, being co-opted a bit. And then it becomes, I think, kind of less authentic. And as a result, there are, you know, some criticisms out there of when you hear love your body, or criticisms of being of the body positive movement. And one of those, I wanted to address two of those specifically. One of those criticisms is what I would just call concern trolling. You know, like every time you see an article and anything on body positivity, maybe not every time, I love hyperbole, but, you know, they'll always be like, well, this is promoting not being healthy. Obesity is not healthy. You know, we shouldn't glorify not being healthy. And it's always this constant identifying thinness with healthiness and fatness with unhealthiness. Really, human physiology is a little bit more complex than that. And even if you are, you know, like very convinced that it's not possible to be above a certain body fat percentage and to be healthy, I still don't think you're going to change anybody's mind by shaming them and by making them feel worse about themselves. One thing that I remember being taught in teacher training is that when you offer a student an adjustment, instead of criticizing what's wrong or trying to fix what you think is wrong about their pose, instead, you enhance what is beautiful about their pose. You tell them like what you truly see that looks good. And if someone says, oh my gosh, Kat, that your chest is so open in that back bend, my brain is going to go, oh, thank you. And it's going to get a little more open. In the same context, you know, if I can truly look at every person and see what's beautiful in them and tell them what is beautiful about them, then I think that that's going to do a lot more for that person's self-esteem, that person's health, anything, than saying like, oh, well, I think that you're unhealthy because blah. Like, there have even been studies that have shown, and I'll link to some of these in the show notes, that when you criticize people or tell them that their weight is unacceptable, that that does not make anyone more likely to lose weight. You know, not that losing weight is or should be the goal necessarily, but if that's someone's intention, shaming or telling someone they're unhealthy or telling someone they're glorifying being unhealthy or something, that's not going to help. And to that, I just want to say, quit concern trolling. Off the soapbox a little bit. The second criticism that we often hear about body positivity is simply that, you know, can we maybe be body neutral instead? That telling people that they have to love their body can be a bit presumptuous, because not everybody does love their body, and not everybody necessarily thinks that they need to love their body. There is an article on Skeptic, which I'm a fan of that blog. I don't know if anyone else is, but I'm sure it's a very popular blog. An article on Skeptic by Elsie, and I really loved this response. She says that the problem, meaning the problem with, you know, the phrase love your body, is someone else telling me how to feel. The problem is being told that there is a standard of beauty and I should ignore it. I should ignore it despite the fact that everyone is still holding me to it. I should ignore it and create my own. As long as it makes me feel pseudo good and makes other people feel okay with how I pretend to feel about me. But while we're pretending, the real world standards don't exist. The real world continues judging us. It's okay to be more critical of a woman who's accepted herself. She's strong and can take it. In fact, wow, what a conceited bitch she must be to think she's so great when she's clearly not. Maybe someone needs to take her down. She really has no business acting like she's as good as other people. But here's the thing. It's okay to not love my body. It's okay to not even like my body. They're my feelings and it's my body, and I will use those feelings to feel however I want about my body. I don't need you to tell me how to feel. And I'll link to that whole piece in the show notes, but I think that that's a valid criticism and something that we should keep in mind when we're using love your body maybe as a catchphrase.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, it's what is it Byron Katie talks about having your business in someone else's business? It's like, ultimately, we want to keep ourselves in our own business.
That's what my kindergarten teacher always said, too.
It's strange. Like, everything that you ever really needed to know really was taught in kindergarten. It's like, be kind. Keep your attention in your own business. It's
yeah.
Like, these are really about 99.9% of what you need to do in life. But
it really is. Yeah. Carling Harps talks about this a little bit in her piece, too, the one that I mentioned earlier, when she says, quote, "I want to make more than a proclamation of love yourself. I want more than stop being so mean to yourself. You're great. Think positive. I want more than super sweaty vinyasa classes to detox from Thanksgiving." She mentioned that, too. "And I want more than photos of sunsets with inspirational Rumi quotes. I want us to practice what we preach. As teachers, as mothers, husbands, friends, hell, as general people in life, we can't just talk about it. We need to be about it." And that's where I think it comes back to, like, shifting our culture to not just say, like, oh, you should love your body, you're fine. It, or, you know, on the flip, making someone feel like they're wrong for not loving their body. But for me, it comes back to inclusivity. It comes back to acceptance. And it comes back to constantly learning, constantly checking ourselves, and constantly spending time with people who are different than us so that we can learn. And again, I like what the Yoga and Body Yoga and Body Image Coalition does with the "Love Your Body is not a hashtag," or "Love Your Body is more than a hashtag," because it is. Loving your body is a process. It's not always easy. It's not something that everyone is interested in. But I think the more that we can facilitate a yoga environment that is body positive, the more that we can make that possible for ourselves and our students and others.
Yeah, this is the body. What did it just say? Body positivity is more than a hashtag. I like that, because it's like, this is really, I mean, again, I'm going to the scriptures. It's like, I see this as a direct application of Yoga Sutra 233. So it's like, really, the yoga starts to happen once you stop moving, once you start going in, and once you start shifting your vidya. So, I mean, that's essentially...
What, can you define vidya for the listener?
Well, vidya is like... vidya is sort of like your view, or your...
like your worldview?
Sort of like your worldview, but it's bigger than just like, oh, you know, I think that ISIS is blah, blah, blah. It's something that, like, incorporates your whole being, as well as the beings that are in your life.
It's like the lens in which you view yourself and others.
Yeah, it's the lens that you almost, you can change the lens, but, like, it's not that easy. It's like, it takes time, and it takes transformation, and it takes life experience, and it takes practice, and it takes pain. Yeah, so it's a complex process of growing.
Yeah.
Of learning, as you just said a minute ago.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, one thing that we hear a lot about in yoga is the beginner's mind. And that's, I think, a really important concept is, you know, that we never think that we've got it. We never think that we know it. But just, like, always maintaining this openness that there's more to learn. And that, you know, approaching every day maybe as
a
beginner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Being in the beginner's mind is actually the antidote for transforming negative vidya. Because when you're in the now, it starts to cause the things that are then and not now to sort of shift a little bit, because the now is really all that there actually really is. So oftentimes we have negative body image because we're suffering from a then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Well, so you know what that reminds me of is the Yoga International Fall Conference is happening just as we're recording this.
Literally as we're recording this right now.
I know, we're missing Shiva Ray, but luckily it'll be available all week. All of these great presentations will be available all this weekend for free, but you listeners, well, this is the future that we're talking
in
now.
It's crazy.
Yeah, talking to the future. We just had Back to the Future Day this week, and, you know, the future is here.
When you hear this, the yoga conference will have been over, but you can get it.
Yes, that's what we're saying. You can get it, and you can go to yogainternational.com, and you can get the conference pass, and you can keep the conference and everything. And what we're talking about really reminds me a lot of Diane Bondi, first of all, discusses a lot of these issues in her presentation, which is excellent, and it's on yoga and equality and social justice. She has practice too. And Cindy Lee also has a practice on and a workshop on radical inclusivity. And when we were filming Cindy's, I was curious what she was going to talk about under the title Radical Inclusivity. And it's also an excellent workshop and presentation. And a lot of what she talks about is accepting all of the parts of ourselves, like, you know, like using our yoga practice, using our lives, like learning to accept not just the parts of ourselves that we like or we think that are good or desirable, but the parts of ourselves that maybe we don't like so much. And of course, that draws back to the mind, and it also can draw back to the body. And I was thinking about, I saw this great article online. I think it was shared by the Fit and Feminist Facebook page, which if you don't like them on Facebook and you're at all interested in feminism and fitness, I highly recommend it. Even if you're not, they just have some great articles. And this particular article was shared, and it's from superstrengthhealth.com, and it's called Thick Thighs Save Lives. And I'm going to link to it in the show notes because I really liked it. But the writer talks about how she had always disliked her thick thighs, and that for her, it took her admiring the thick thighs of someone else to learn to love and accept hers. And it's just this whole process about how she's learning to love and accept her thighs. And it's called Thick Thighs Save Lives because... at least I think because near the end of the article, she says, quote, "My thighs saved my life. Kind of a weird thing to think, but it was true, wasn't it? That my thighs walked me away from my alcoholic abusive parent as a teenager. That they supported me when I no longer wanted to get out of bed. That they took me step by step to every group therapy meeting I went to, every doctor's appointment in the early days of recovery, even when I felt too tired to move, to the homes of every caring friend, to the gym and through every deadlift, sprint, and push press. Respecting my thighs became a conduit. It brought me the connection and intimacy because I stopped being afraid of eating, moving, and living among other people. It brought me closer to my mom and my sister, women of the same thighs, women that I wanted a relationship more than I could even articulate or understand. It brought me to women aside from my sister and my mom too, and to queer folks. Holy shit, I guess I am not the only person that has struggled with hating a certain aspect of my body. I guess I'm not the only one who could have used a little support. Embracing my thighs brought me into a personal nutrition practice rooted in loving the ever-living shit of every inch of my being. It separated me from using exercise as a torture mechanism. It took me away from the battle against myself, and it brought me right back into my life." I'll link to the whole article in the show notes, but I thought that that was, even though it wasn't from a yoga source, to me that's so yogic. I just loved it. And perhaps, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, that resonated with me so much because my thighs are something that I always felt and continue to feel self-conscious about. And I kind of almost had an opposite experience where I always used to hide my thighs. I'd never wear shorts. And I said to a friend of mine that I worked with one day, I said, you know, like something about like not wanting to show off my thighs. And she said, like, "Kat, are you crazy? You have the best thighs." And I looked at her like she was insane. And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, "Your thighs are like cannons." She said, "Thighs are like cannons. They're so powerful." And I had never thought of them as strong and powerful. I had just always thought of them as too big. And as soon as she said that, like, that was the first step for me in, you know, like, learning to like them and see them as strong, just like the author. So while I wouldn't necessarily tell that to your yoga students, you know, coming from a friend, for me, that was very helpful. So again, this is just like such a big topic and there's so much that can be said. And I want to, I'm just, you know, like I'm looking through the show notes here and we have so many great articles that I want to link to and that I want to share with you because there's so many cool people doing amazing things about yoga and body image and working with that conversation. So I'm sure that we'll revisit similar topics in the future. But Michael, is there anything like doing your research that you came across or anything else that you want to add to this discussion from your perspective as Michael?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just that in yoga culture, we're so, I'm going to say this word again, and I think maybe it eventually it'll be preceded by a hashtag, we're so Anamaya normative. And I think that we put our focus so much on the body, losing weight, having a body image, and all this.
Well, you have to have, I mean, if you have a body, you have a body image.
Yeah, I think that maybe we could evolve the conversation from an Anamaya normative place to maybe a Pranamaya or Manomaya or Vijnanam or heavens to Betsy, maybe an Anandamaya normative discussion. So,
if you have no idea what Michael is talking about, go to yogainternational.com and type the word kosha in the search bar.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd like to see us start talking more about the other aspects of yoga, the hidden bodies, the
subtle
bodies.
Other aspects of us that we are. I mean, I think it is important to talk about our bodies, and it is important. Like, I think that personally, like as a woman, as a feminist, as a yoga practitioner, like to me, that's an essential part of the conversation. It goes back to the personal is political. You know, like, thanks, women's studies professors in college. But goes back to all of that. But also, I think you're right. I think that we can get stuck in that and forget that there's so much more to yoga. And that in that same regard, yoga, I think, automatically becomes more inclusive when we stop presenting it as something just about pretty poses and look at all of the other benefits and all of the other aspects and all of the other things that yoga has to offer.
That's the point I'm trying to make, is it's just not about the pose at all. Like,
I don't know about it at all.
Well, but you and I will disagree on this.
I think
it's not about the pose at all, but, you know, we can disagree.
We can. I think our listeners like it when we disagree. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that I think we've talked a lot. We shared a lot of opinions, a lot of hopefully good resources, and we'll link to those a little bit more cohesively for you. If you have something that you would like to discuss, if you want to leave your comments, questions for Michael and I, topic ideas, if you want to send those to us, please send them to yogatalk@yogainternational.com. And again, if you want more on this discussion, check out podcast number one, Yoga and Body Image. Go to our SoundCloud page. You can also check out Yoga and the Internet, The Pornification of Yoga, some other podcasts that we've done that have kind of touched upon these topics as well. And you can listen to, I think it's our 10 most recent podcasts on our iTunes page. And if you like Yoga Talk, please, pretty please, leave us a review rating. We would really appreciate that. So I think that about wraps up this discussion. You have anything else you want to leave the listeners with, Michael?
Peace.
Peace. And this is the Householders to take you out. Namaste.